This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast, which throughout the 2021 season is being presented by NFL Game Pass. We'll have more information on that later in this episode, but remember, you can also sign up to stream all the preseason games in full, plus a host of other content, all for free. So head over to nflgamepass.com to find out more, and also you can watch this and other episodes there if you so wish. Now, before we get into the show, I should also ask you to leave a review and please a five-star rating wherever it is that you listen. It really helps us make this podcast more visible and for new listeners to discover the stories we are telling. So tell a friend, share the podcast, and leave a review. We do really appreciate it. Now, we have a treat in store for you this time out. Already in season two of the podcast, we brought you a head coach, current players, Super Bowl winners, Hall of Famers, and now we're bringing you the super agent, the man who has a track record of proving he's the best in the business when it comes to getting the deals done and building careers. Lee Steinberg has seen it all in the NFL. He's shaped the professional lives of some of our sport's biggest stars throughout a career that spanned five decades, one time representing all seven quarterbacks in the same Super Bowl. He's even doing it still, representing the likes of Patrick Mahomes. If I ask you to show me the money, you may even know who he is without realizing it, as the Tom Cruise movie Jerry Maguire was influenced by Lee's career as a sports agent. As you will find from my chat with him, he's actually rather the opposite from the character we see on the silver screen. Lee is quiet, considered, and someone who's made his name by ensuring his clients give back as much as they can from their career in the NFL. And that's where I started my conversation with him, all about the inspiration behind his desire for every NFL player to give something back to the communities where they came from and the communities they represent.
My father raised us with two core values. One was to treasure relationships, especially family. And the second was to try to make a meaningful difference in a positive way and help people who couldn't help themselves. So my focus has always been, how can we attack societal problems? How can we help individual people who are having a rough time, and how can we use the power of sports to try to make a meaningful difference in the world?
Were you always drawn to the NFL? And when you started your agency, were you an NFL fan, or was that where the money was? I mean,
well, remember, there was really no agentry when I started. I was living in a dorm at UC Berkeley, and they moved the freshman football team into the dorm. And one of the students was a quarterback named Steve Bartkowski. I was a dorm counselor. And so he became the very first pick in the first round of the 1975 draft. And I was out of law school about a year and a half. I'd just been traveling. And he asked me to represent him. And he was the first pick overall. And there I was, brimming with legal experience, never having represented someone. And the NFL at that time didn't have any rule that team had to deal with agents. So they could just slam the phone down and say, sorry, we'll only deal with the player. So it was a different time. We got the largest rookie contract in NFL history. And when we arrived in Atlanta, there were Klieg lights in the sky, like for movie premiere. A huge crowd was pressed up against the police line. And the first thing we heard is, we interrupt the Johnny Carson show to bring you a special news bulletin. So I realized this was a little different than Berkeley. And I saw that athletes could retrace their roots, and they were the celebrities, and they were the figures of veneration and idol worship. And they could go back to the high school, collegiate, and professional community and set up charitable and community programs that enhance the quality of life.
And that is, I was going to come on to that later, but you lead me to it now. So that is something you kind of, not insist upon, but that's a plan you present to your players, isn't it? About making sure, again, following that message of giving back. You set out that plan when you kind of offer up what you bring as an agent, right?
So that we talk about retracing your roots and going back to the high school community, scholarship fund, boys and girls club, church, then to the collegiate level where you set up a scholarship fund or aid the weight room or do something to stay bonded with those alums. And then the most important skill in all this is listening. So if I can draw out another human being and find out their deepest anxieties and fears and their greatest hopes and dreams, and ask that young man, is there some problem in the world you'd like to leave a legacy on? So then we would set up a charitable foundation with leading business figures, political figures, and community leaders, all helping to execute the program. So an example would be the former running back Warwick Dunn, who has a program we set up called Homes for the Holidays, where he's put the 175th single mother and her family into the only home, first home they'll ever own, by making a down payment. So it's athletes changing lives.
When you look at athletes and you're working on their charitable foundations, but you're also looking at what pushes their buttons, right? As you're starting to grow your business, you learn about different athletes. And I guess from one thing I've learned with this podcast is that players take so many different routes to the NFL. A couple of your guys, Warren Moon, went up to Canada. Steve Young went to the USFL. I mean, that those two are just an example that every player is going to have a unique story, and you need to find out what that is as the agent and kind of steer them the right way, right?
So I have to figure out what their value system and priorities are. That means, how do they feel about short-term economic gain, money right now, or long-term economic security, or family considerations, or spiritual considerations, or geographical thoughts that they like a certain weather or size of city, or high profile or endorsements. And then for an athlete, how important is starting? Being on a winning team, the quality of coaching, the system that the team plays. And you need to have the clearest view of what really matters to that athlete and cut below the surface and peel back the layers of the onion until you really hit the core of what makes that person motivated. And understand that always. And as you're right, there's so many different standpoints, but we profile athletes on a college campus to try to get those who are a little more ambitious, have some social conscience and awareness, and try to figure that out from the beginning.
You had eight number one overall picks and 64 first round picks. I mean, with Steve Barkowski, you started then as you meant to go on. I mean, tell me about how things grew. And then was it a case of once you start to get one big name, it became easier to attract another? Does it kind of have a snowball effect?
Yes. So what happens is that I realized very early on in the sport of football, it was the quarterback. And the quarterback who gets the focus broadcast in every game, the quarterback who has more name recognition, makes more money as a rookie very often, makes more money as a veteran very often, is a great role model for a charity, and does endorsements. So I started to aggregate first-round draft picks with quarterbacks, and at one point had half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So that led to a practice that ultimately had 90 players, of whom 86 had been to the Pro Bowl. So it was a pretty elite group. 12 of them now are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We also went into baseball and basketball and boxing with people like Lennox Lewis. But football is the passion of the United States right now. It, by 2-1, is more popular than any other sport. And it also dominates the airwaves, so that during football season, the nighttime Nielsen ratings show 5 of the top 10 shows are NFL nighttime football. And we just signed new contracts for an increase in television money in the midst of a pandemic with no fans in stands or very few. With all this uncertainty, still people look at it as a lost leader, a way to build their network programming by having that captive audience to show promos to on a Sunday afternoon or evening.
Now, to reference Jerry Maguire here for a moment, there's a scene in the movie where Tom Cruise is at the NFL draft. He has his young star quarterback, Frank Cushman, who is being chased by every team. And it really captures the nature of what happens when a star player exits college and enters the NFL. There are deals being done across the board, negotiations happening, and a huge press pack trying to get insight and the big scoop. Lee's been at the heart of the process ever since he started out. And that means he's seen the best and the worst of it, where dreams can be made or crushed.
So, Neil, imagine a young man who from Pop Warner on is dreaming about this draft night, and he's now surrounded by some number of the people closest to him in the world. So you've got mothers, fathers, grandmothers, aunts, you have players from his team, you have everyone. When they show you that little picture on draft night with three people sitting on a couch in a front room, what they're not showing you is the other 75 people who are gathered around. They just don't want to look insensitive to, you know, mass gatherings. So you have all those people, and we've done our best job to prepare an athlete for which teams are interested and where he thinks he might go. So it shouldn't be a huge surprise, because we're talking to teams and they're talking to us, and we have a fair idea of what they're thinking. But anyway, the tension starts to ratchet up, and draft time's not real time. Every second ticks off like a minute, and every minute ticks off like an hour. It's like water torture time, drip, drip, drip. And the anxiety and the pressure cranks up and up and up. For the guy who's not going to be drafted where he thinks he is, it's excruciating. Every pick is like an insult. And for someone not drafted at all, it's like the ultimate rejection in life. So it's a sad day. For the person drafted well, pick comes and euphoria breaks down. There's this incredible rush of energy and exultation. And it's really my favorite day of the year.
What do you do if it goes wrong? And they are experiencing, as you describe it, water torture. Are you just a shoulder to cry on? Are you a hand to hold?
If you have information that the player is going to be drafted in a later round, then you're just encouraging that he's got the same ability to make the team as everyone else. You talk about players in the past who've been drafted lower, who have been big successes. You're doing everything possible. Now, when that player is drafted, maybe he thought he was a third rounder, but he's a sixth rounder. He's still happy at the moment he's drafted. But in terms of preparation, you have to be strong, and you have to try to keep the atmosphere loose, and you have to keep the player from feeling like every pick that doesn't pick him is a big rejection.
I'm sure every interview you've done, Lee, and this will be no different, we'll mention Tom Cruise, we'll mention Jerry Maguire, and you're followed around by Cameron Crowe for 18 months, right? What was that experience like? And was it all kind of still a little bit surreal? Just tell me about that experience of, first of all, being followed around and also being the real life Jerry Maguire.
Well, Cameron was really good in that he could fit into the background. So there were times where I took him directly, like to a dinner with Jim Irsay at the league meetings. But there were other times he was a fly on the wall. And I told him lots of stories. So he went with me to the NFL league meetings in 1993, where I was walking free agents around. That's where he sat with Tim McDonald and asked him what he was looking for in life. And that's where he gestured to the screen and said, I'm looking, Lou Dobbs, the money line was on. He said, I'm looking for someone to show me winning. I'm looking for someone to show me success. I'm looking for someone, a team, to show me the money. And Cameron, that feels like he wrote that. Tim felt like he said it, but whoever did, it's out. And then he went with me to the draft in 93, to games, to sat in my office, went to pro scouting day at USC. And after that, he would just interview me, and I would tell him lots of stories about my career and things I'd done. And then I was the technical advisor, so I had to vet the script to make sure that the dialogue read authentic, and that the look on the set of things wouldn't jar a real football fan out of the plot. And then I worked with the actors, so I took Cuba Gooding Jr. with me down to the Super Bowl in Phoenix and made him pretend he was a wide receiver all week. You know, he hung out with Desmond Howard and Amani Toomer, and actually had to show the quarterback, played by Jerry O'Connell, how to throw a spiral, because Neil, he had gone to NYU and they didn't have football there. There was a lot of life on the screen, and it's been 20-something years, and still when I go out to an airport or dinner, someone will always run up and either say to me or ask me to say those four words that start with show me.
How are you different from Jerry Maguire?
I started with the first pick in the draft, but that doesn't make much of a movie, because you need to have conflict and and perseverance and overcome. And Tom Cruise is Jerry Maguire, and Cameron Crowe wrote Jerry Maguire, but there's a lot of life up on the screen.
Your story, Lee, is one of redemption, one of hope, I guess, when you think about it. And I've seen you put on Twitter 11 years now on the sunny side of the street. You had it all. If you don't mind, maybe just tell him, I know you had the battle with alcoholism. What happened, and how did you almost lose it? Well, you did lose it all, right?
I got to the point in my life where my two kids have a disease called retinitis pigmentosa, which is an eye disease leading to complete blindness. And then at the same period, my father was dying of cancer. And then we lost a home in a beach city to mold. And I felt helpless, like Gulliver on the beach. So I did, you know, the weak thing, which was to turn to alcohol. And I got to the point where I realized that I had a problem, and I had to close down my office and close down my condo and go live with my parents. And then I had an epiphany at one point that I wasn't a starving peasant in Darfur. I wasn't named Steinberg in Nazi Germany. I didn't have any real disease. What excuse did I have not to be a good parent, and what excuse not to try to keep making a difference in the world? So I went off to sober living, worked a 12-step program with a unique fellowship, and on Sunday celebrated 11 years of continuous sobriety. But what I've always said is, if you're out there struggling, if you're hopeless and depressed because of problems with some addictive substance, don't lose hope. There are people who can help. And you can find your way back.
You did find your way back. And tell me about finding your way back, because surely when you start to come back into the arena, all you have is the name Lee Steinberg, right? And what that stood for before. Is that literally how it was? You're relying on what you had before. And actually, interesting, I'll ask you, did the likes of the big name quarterbacks you represented, you had seven in one Super Bowl, we've talked about that before, were a lot of people still with you through the struggles, or did you feel alone? And then about the comeback, really.
Well, I had shut my practice down, but people like Troy Aikman and Warren Moon never went away. And I didn't make this back alone. I had help from all sorts of friends and a unique fellowship. And so they were still there. But look, there were all sorts of questions when I re-entered. You know, I knew I had to be prepared for how can you guarantee you'll stay sober, which you can't. And how do you still have any contacts in the NFL? You know, you're getting up there in age. You know, will you be around for my son? You couldn't manage your own money. How are you going to manage ours? You had to be prepared, because I don't have a divine right to represent athletes. They look out there trying to find services. So I was prepared for all that. And then I found a group of people who funded me and started again in football. I should tell you, my comeback to me has been to be a good father and to maintain a sobriety. I don't mean to be arrogant, but I didn't really doubt that we had a unique approach that would appeal to a certain type of athlete. And I retained my relationship with owners and general managers. People are understanding. And we had started to represent players about 2014, had some draft picks. Paxton Lynch in 2016 was the first rounder. So that got me back into that model. And then the next year was Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of other players.
Now, someone like Patrick Mahomes doesn't just fall into the lap of an agent. It takes time for them to scout them in high school and get to know them before introducing themselves to the families and discussing what they can do for a player's career. As Lee describes it, he himself has to go through an interview process almost in order to earn the player's trust and faith in working with him.
That's exactly how it is. You could be confirmed for Secretary of State at the end of the hearing. And so Patrick's parents were the people we met with, and they had Patrick's godfather, who was a baseball pitcher with Patrick Sr., LaTroy Hawkins, and they sat in meetings, and essentially you make a presentation for how you're going to root someone as role models, how you're going to take them through the draft. At that point, Mahomes was not that highly rated. You're talking about how you're going to mentor them into a career. You talk about contract negotiations. You talk about endorsements and marketing and branding and all those things. And then you have a second interview, and they're screening because they're approached by 1,000 people. So the Mahomes kept screening, and then the group started to get narrower. And then after the season, we met Patrick and found he was really grounded and exceptionally bright. And it just felt right. It was a values match. And again, at that time, he wasn't the Patrick Mahomes that now is arguably the most valuable player in football. He was, people thought, maybe a gunslinger who, was undisciplined and threw multiple interceptions, but they weren't projecting him. They didn't realize that Texas Tech had such a rough defense that if Patrick wasn't scoring a touchdown on every single drive, or aspiring to it, they were not going to win. They needed 55 points.
When you see all the other quarterbacks you've represented, I mean, did you see he was special straight away? You must now recognize, just, we're talking an all-time great, right? We're living in history here.
He had a freakish arm. The ability to make throws from different angles and different locations was pretty amazing. And then what you're looking for in a franchise quarterback, Neil, is someone who in adversity, I mean, obviously accuracy is important, leadership's important, decision-making is important, but what you're really looking for, if you have all that, is someone who in adversity, because most games are fairly close, there's 30% are blowouts, but the rest could come down the last quarter or the last drive. And so you're looking at someone who's, he's thrown a couple interceptions, the crowd is booing, the center is looking at the quarterback like he's on hallucinogens, what's he doing? And the game's getting out of hand. What does the quarterback do then? Can he adopt a quiet mind, focus, screen out extraneous distractions, and elevate his level of play to take a team on and through to victory? So it's what happens in those crisis situations. And he had all of that. He was amazing. And on pro scouting day, he threw the ball about 80 yards, and people went ooh and ah.
It doesn't have to be Mahomes. This could be any quarterback or any client, really. When you're with those guys, and actually Patrick is a good example, though, from the last couple of years, are you kind of there at contract time, or are you in there in a circle? So are you with Patrick after he wins the Super Bowl? Are you with Patrick after he loses the Super Bowl? Just trying to get a little bit of insight for the viewers on the agent-player relationship.
So I have the good luck to have a really vital younger partner who's now CEO and runs things day to day, whose name is Chris Cabot. And Chris pretty much would talk to Patrick every day and do a lot of it. He took the lead on his negotiation. And so we do it as a team. And so somebody's in contact with Patrick all the time. Chris has the day-to-day responsibilities of Patrick. Yes, you try to be with him after the game. Yes, you try to do some visits that are not totally contract-oriented. That sports agentry has three parts: recruiting, without which there's no practice, contract negotiations, and then client interaction. And on the last part, you need to be there for a banquet, for a charitable event. You need to be there and have that constant communication.
We'll be back after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast, so don't go anywhere. So we interrupt this episode of the podcast with Lee Steinberg so I can briefly chat about our presenting partner for the 2021 season, NFL Game Pass. We're into week 5 of our second season, which means the new NFL campaign itself is edging closer. With the preseason now entering its final week, that also means team rosters must be cut to 53 players. There will be some more games to be played as teams fine-tune their preparations, and you can watch them all live and on demand with NFL Game Pass. That's not all either, as streaming now is the 2021 season of Hard Knocks, which follows the Dallas Cowboys. There's also 24/7 NFL Network coverage and NFL original programs. This is all available for free with no credit card required. It doesn't get much better than that. So head over to NFLGamePass.com to sign up now. And remember, if you'd like to watch this episode of my chat with Lee Steinberg or the previous interviews from this current series, the podcast is available to stream for free on NFL Game Pass all season. Now let's get back to the show.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and my conversation with Lee Steinberg. Now, before the break, we heard how Lee has helped shape the careers of his clients right through from Warren Moon to Patrick Mahomes. But there does come a time when those careers have to end. Father time catches up with every athlete, no matter who they are, and they have to walk away from a sport that has been their life since before they were a teenager. Helping an athlete transition from sportsman to civilian is just as difficult as helping make them into a star in the first place.
I have rarely met a professional athlete who willingly retired. Now, they come to the fact where their skills have diminished and there's not great demand for their services, or they're injured and they really can't play anymore. But even then, they struggle with it because they've had this structure for their whole life. They've got an itinerary. They know where they're supposed to be at this given time. There's a whole structure to the way the year works. They're hyper-competitive, so they've always had this form to compete in. They love the camaraderie with the guys in the locker room, and they sorely miss it, when it's gone. And they miss the adrenaline high of competition. So this has been their structure. So my job is to prepare them for the very beginning for the time that happens, and prepare them for second career and challenge them as to what other skills they have that would be fun for them. So maybe it's media, maybe it's business, maybe it's coaching, maybe it's politics. But you're trying to use those off seasons to prepare them so they slide smoothly into the second career. So when the safety from Kansas City, Daron Cherry, has his Cherry Foundation, he retires and he's given the opportunity to buy the Anheuser-Busch distributorship, which is a license to print money in Missouri. And then he goes on and we introduce him to the owner of the Jaguars, and Daron becomes the first retired player to be a minority owner of a team afterwards. Or you have a Desmond Howard who now does ESPN's College Game Day as one of the hosts, or Steve Young and Brent Jones, who both took the leadership in hedge type funds, investment funds, and are doing better financially than they did when they played sports. So you from the very first time I meet the client, I'm already focused on the whole cycle and the fact that we've got to get them prepared. But the answer to your first question is, even with all of that, they're still not prepared.
Yeah, they still don't want to do it. What about the art of making a deal? And I know when I've spoken to you at Super Bowls in the past, you've talked about, again, you've got alpha males on both sides, right? You've got the alpha male player who wants as much as he can get, and you've got an owner who, again, is a very successful billionaire businessman who got to the top operating a certain way. In the middle is you, making sure both sides are happy. Take me, if you can, into the, making a deal.
When you say billionaire, you mean the fact that when if I don't sign the player with Jerry Jones, he's not going to start taking the bus to work and with the sack lunch and life will go on.
I think it'll be okay.
Men who have made it in the rough and tumble free enterprise system, who over and over again were told they couldn't do this or that, and they did it, and they became those rarities. So my job is to listen again, to understand what's in the heart and mind of an owner or a general manager, to understand what makes an effective deal for them, to try to put my arguments in their terms and to explain to them why a deal would be right. It's to listen carefully to what their priorities are and what their needs are, and see if there's a way we can construct a win-win scenario where we're achieving our goals, and at the same time, they're achieving what's really important to them. And if you can put your heart and head into the head and heart of another human being and see the world the way they see it and try to speak to them in their terms, you have a much better chance. The thing we really have to avoid is confrontation, because when there's a lockdown, when there's a holdout, when there's a lack of meeting of the minds, my players don't have years to do this crap. Time is really essential. So, and what happens when you lock down two parties, Neil, is that they can sit there forever with young men growing old and winter turning to spring. Still never make a move. So I've got to keep coming and coming. And so what's really important is resilience. It's you can get knocked back, things can look discouraging, but you've got to be able to come back over and over and over again and never give up.
No names, because I'm not looking to break news. I'm just looking for insight. Have you ever been kicked out of an owner's office?
Yes. I once had a GM turn his desk over at me, and this was a big wooden desk, and he got so angry he threw the desk. I once was marched out of a training camp under security guard with a team, but by and large my relationships are harmonious. Things have gotten easier since the cap, and I went to owners and said, look, we're doing this wrong. The nature of our battle should not be labor versus management. Football's battle is with baseball, basketball, home box office, Netflix, Walt Disney World, and every other form of discretionary entertainment spending. So let's avoid these acrimonious individual negotiations or truncated collective bargaining, because all we're doing is pushing fans away. Why don't we work together to get all of this done behind the scenes? And then we can think about an NFL network and huge television contracts and stadia that have ancillary revenue streams and the internet. And so that's been my approach now for many, many years. Once those first years of hostility towards agents came to an end. And it's, I feel like I have to be a steward of the sport. And for players to do well, fans have to be excited about football or baseball or basketball. They have to, you can't force feed them unremitting diets of athletic misbehavior and business details without alienating them.
What do you see the future of the NFL being? You mentioned just a moment ago the huge new broadcasting deals that are in place. International, of course, is something, Lee. There's always the talk of the London franchise with the two stadiums, world-class stadiums in London, the government support, the fan support. But I guess with that comes maybe extra games for players. How do you see everything as it's moving forward with all these new stadiums as well?
So I think we're in the height of mania over NFL football, and it's blue skies ahead. The TV contracts, because of that lost leader bidding where they're Les Moonves, the head of CBS, once famously said, oh, I just won Thursday Night Football, so I have the right to lose $100 million. But he did it anyway because he could show promos on Thursday night for the rest of CBS broadcasting and get their ratings up. So TV is going to continue to expand. We're just seeing the first digression from free TV with Amazon having part of the package, but I think by and large it will remain with networks that are accessible for $150 to buy a little TV. The stadia are going to get more and more elaborate, more, it all comes down to fan experience. So there'll be a big focus on how you keep millennials in a stadium for 3.5 hours when there's only 18 or 28 minutes of action. And so there'll be all sorts of entertainment zones, wiring into stadia that allows you to multitask, lots of things to do. we'll continue to see the growth of fantasy. There'll be the growth of virtual reality with fan experience, able to sort of replicate what it really feels like to be a quarterback. I think it's going to be innovation and better ways to bring fans closer to the sport.
Now, as fans of the NFL, we always think about the wow moments we have witnessed, the moments that we know will define history and be spoken about for years to come. For me, that wow moment was when I was on the sidelines for Sky Sports, when Malcolm Butler jumped in front of Russell Wilson's pass to bring about the most incredible ending to the Super Bowl in Arizona. It was a pinch yourself moment, a moment when you feel privileged to have been there to witness it. For Lee, though, those moments are far more personal.
Some of the highlights are presenting Warren Moon at the Hall of Fame. So I gave his presenting speech, and we had gone through 23 years of football together. And it was like one of my best friends and standing in front of Canton talking about that long journey was particularly intimate and exciting. Steve Young running off the field when he played in the 94 Miami Super Bowl. He'd been in the shadow of Joe Montana forever. And running up and hugging him and him saying, "The monkey's off my back, the monkey's off my back." Troy Aikman's first Super Bowl, where he was explaining to me that he was hyperventilating, and we're at the Rose Bowl, and I'm in the car on the way back, and I said, "Troy, do you realize what just happened?" He said, "Oh, yeah, we won the game." I said, "No, you entered the field and you were Troy Aikman, good football player. You're now Troy Aikman, name and lights." He said, "Oh, not really," and everything. So we pull up to the hotel and there's a mob that greets this limo. And so you could feel the palpable change. Standing in a banquet that Warren Moon was doing for the Crescent Moon Foundation and seeing all the kids rise that went to college on his scholarships and having one young man get up and say, I just finished med school. I had no idea I was even going to college. God bless Warren Moon."
So there you are. That's my conversation with Super Agent Lee Steinberg. Hope you enjoyed that. This is the time of the podcast where I bring in producer Gary Hayes. But Gary, no mailbag today. I just wanted to get your take on Lee Steinberg, because I know you're a big movie fan and you are a big Jerry Maguire fan. So it must have been an enjoyable interview for you.
Oh, you know what? Last week when we did Philip Lindsay, I said about him being a real life Rod Tidwell, and just to say I meant that with a lot of respect rather than it being anything derogatory about him, because I know he's a character that divides opinion. But and I said that was my favourite episode we'd done, and a week later you've knocked it out of the park, Neil. You've kicked a field goal or whatever it is you need to do in American football to win a game, because this is my favourite episode.
Fantastic. I kicked a last second field goal, did I?
It was laces out this time. Different
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. No, that's good. I like that that analogy. He is a fascinating guy, though. I mean, it's just, I think what, and we kind of said it in the voiceover there. You, if I was to tell you the real life Jerry Maguire, you'd think of Tom Hanks, and you'd think of just this loud, brash agent. And Lee couldn't be further from that. He's, you know, he's just this unassuming guy, Gary. I catch up with Lee every year at the Super Bowl. He always invites me to his Super Bowl party. He just walks around the media center with all his bits of paper in a carrier bag. Just the most unassuming guy. Has no airs or graces and a really nice man.
I think you said Tom Hanks there. I think Tom Hanks would have been someone better to play him, because obviously Tom Cruise,
Tom Cruise, sorry.
That's okay. I thought, should I correct him and then go
you
back and cut
do.
It out? But
no,
I thought,
don't.
I'm never allowed to correct myself. So I thought Neil's not allowed to correct himself, right?
Exactly.
But it was great listening to him, because I'd read his book as well. I think it's called The Agent. It was so fascinating. He talks about how when he was at college and how, you know, he started getting into the sport, and then he signed Warren Moon, and the way he navigated, you know, the pathway through, you know, the political landscape of trying to get a player signed to a team, and then what happens when a player gets drafted. And I always thought that a player got drafted and that was it. They were given the keys to the kingdom and they went off into the sunset and lived happily ever after, right? But no, when you read his book, you realise the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, that getting drafted is just the beginning.
Yeah, no, it's and he's very clever as well. He talks or has talked to me about in the past, obviously negotiating with billionaires, but he said you can't insult these billionaires because they got to be billionaires for a reason through good business or whatever. So he said it's always a fine line you're treading. So yeah, I'm glad that people enjoyed that. I hope people enjoyed that. And again, we're bringing you players, we're bringing you coaches, we're going to bring you general managers, we're going to bring you agents, every possible aspect of pro football. We're going to bring you on the Neil Reynolds podcast. And next week, Gary, we are going to catch up with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who will be playing back in London this year, led by their new head coach, Urban Meyer. So we've got a good chat with Urban Meyer in the bank, and we'll add some special guests as well from the Jags there. So it'll be a Jags special next time out. So until then, my thanks to you, Gary. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Neil, I know you just did your sign-off there. One more question, actually, if you don't mind.
Go on. Yeah.
You're going to have to sign off again.
Do I have to sign off again?
You have to sign off again. It just came to my head. I just thought. We've done Jerry Maguire now. We've done the real-life Rod Tidwell. We've done the real-life Jerry Maguire. When are we going to get Dan Marino on to talk about his relationship with Jim Carrey and when he nearly got assassinated ahead of the Super Bowl that the Dolphins won?
Well, I just remember the Dolphins actually won a Super Bowl. It was brilliant. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm still rejoicing. I'm still celebrating. When people tell me the Dolphins haven't won a Super Bowl in ages, I say, hang on a minute. We beat the Eagles. We beat the Eagles in Ace Ventura. Well, challenge accepted. Let me get to work on that, Gary.
Excellent. And we just need to find the real-life Ray Finkel now, don't we? I'm sure there's one lurking somewhere.
There absolutely will be. In terms of goodbyes and sign-off, everything I said earlier, just play that back a bit and we'll see.
I'll loop it.
There you go. Bye for now, everyone. Been listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.